Hey y'all, I'm Whitney Scarborough, the host of Wits End. Here we are real people asking hard questions. If you think you hear the hum of a fridge or a train in the background, it's because you probably are. We are recording these episodes from the comfort of my home in a small town called LaGrange, Texas. Well, Vivian Mabuni lives in lovely Southern California. She and her husband, Darren, have been married for 32 years. They have three grown children and are very much enjoying this stage of spending time with adult kids. She gave me a lot of encouragement in this area. I was taking my own set of notes on this one. She works with a ministry called Crew and speaks with Family Life, as well as serves on the board of trustees for Denver Seminary. As an Asian American woman, Vivian is passionate about leading and discipling and does this as she speaks and writes and shares her authentic, vibrant faith. I'm so eager to share this conversation with you on a life of surrender, living with fresh faith, what discipleship really means, and why God designed it like that. Vivian has so much wisdom, and we talk about everything from cancer to ethnic heritage to building a thriving marriage. Let's dive in.
Well, recently I was with a good friend and she actually had, she was reading this book and it was Open Hands, Willing Heart. Whoa, and yes. So and I fun. Said, oh, I know her. She's my friend. wrote that book. And so I want to talk about a little bit about your book and what prompted this book and really what's your hope for it?
Yeah. Well, the title, Open Hands, Willing Heart, to me is almost a litmus test of where I am at in my relationship with the Lord. It really encompasses to me what my faith journey has really had to be about, not had to be, but has been about, and what I hope it will continue to be about. And that really is that we live a life of surrender. And when we have open hands, God is free to put things in our lives, remove things from our lives. We don't really have control over those things, but we can grip our hands or we can actually open our hands. And a willing heart posture is one that is not willful, which I think a lot of Christian women in particular are so amazing, like so talented and gifted, and I think with every good intention can want to do things for God, but when we do it in our own effort, it leads to burnout or cynicism. Sadly, people even walk away from the faith because they were doing everything willfully, like in their own effort and probably with really good intention, but we really were wired to be dependent on the Lord in the midst of what we do. And then the opposite of that would be a will-less heart. We kind of look at everything as a dumpster fire and what's the point of anything. It's just going to be what's going to be. But God, I think, is released to move in our lives when we have a willing heart. And that's one that just says, you know, I'm all in. Like, you will be number one in my life and I will follow where you lead me. You be the good shepherd. I, as the sheep, will follow you wherever you lead. And sometimes those paths are smooth and paved, and other times they're rocky, and sometimes it's just the shadow in the valley of the shadow of death. And so trusting the Lord and following as he leads is really a willing heart. And so the nation to me, Whitney, just encompasses the Christian life. And I've noticed as I travel across the country and meet believers of all ages and stages, and even in different countries, you can tell when you meet a Christian who has surrendered their lives. It's like there's just that quality about them that is so different. You just know that their faith is authentic and not just a Sunday thing, but an everyday thing. So I love that. And I also think that that decision to surrender is one that we re-up over and over. And God continues. Life just gets more complex. And so we're continually surrendering who we are, what we know, and what our circumstances are. And that's kind of the reason why I wrote the book. So I talk about in the book, it's just like the things that challenge us from living with open hands and willing heart, and then what it actually looks like, because living with open hands and willing heart doesn't necessarily mean everything's going to be perfect. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's serving without seeing. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's living our plan B and on and on. So that's what mm-hmm. the book is about in a nutshell.
Yeah, I love like that.
Reflection, mm-hmm. discussion questions at the end. And
yeah. I love that distinction you made between a willful heart, a will-less heart, but then a willing heart in mm-hmm. that finding that place. So what were some of your own like personal circumstances that you wrote out of? Because I'm sure that this book came out of some of your own struggles and things that you were walking through.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I did not grow up in a Christian home. And so I became a Christian in high school after sitting next to my friend in math class who, you know, was glowing. And I was like, what happened to you? And she goes, oh, I became a Christian. And I'm like, really? And so that started me on my spiritual journey. I trusted Christ. I didn't understand that I could live the Christian life in dependence on the Lord, like abiding in Jesus, the true vine. I didn't understand that at all because I didn't have any background even of the Bible. So I was trying to do external things that I knew Christians did. So I would, you know, if I woke up in time, I would drive to church, I'd cry through the songs, and then life would be normal again, like just as always. Like I would try to read the Bible. I didn't have a Bible, so I drove myself to the mall and bought one, and nothing made sense. And I was trying to kind of go through the motions. And then my dad had us move after 17 years in Boulder, Colorado, right before my senior year of high school. And he moved us from Boulder to Hong Kong. And I was just so mad at God. And it was in Hong Kong, Whitney, that I made that first total surrender prayer. And I was just like, God, I need a church and a youth group and Christian friends. And if you do that, I'll give you my whole life. I'll hold nothing back. Like that was really my prayer. And it was in Hong Kong that he met me and I was discipled for the first time and surrendered my life. And I really believe that in that, like that surrender opened my eyes and ears. And so then all of a sudden the Bible came alive. Like God was teaching me of who he was. And there was just, it was just undeniable that God was real. And there was an intimacy that I did not experience before that surrender. So that was the beginning of the surrenders. And then obviously like graduating from college, what was I going to do with my life with each child? And then being diagnosed with breast cancer with three young kids and all of that. So there have been ministry changes, life changes, circumstances. Yeah. And I didn't realize until I was actually being interviewed on a podcast for Open Hands, Willing Heart that one of my surrenders came the summer before my cancer diagnosis.
Wow.
And we were in Japan doing missions. Mm-hmm. And I just asked from God, like, hey, Viv, would you be willing to sell the house in Mission Viejo? Would you be willing to move the kids here to Japan and learn a new language and drive, you know? And I was mad because I'm like, we're already missionaries. We already have to, you know, raise support. We brought this whole team here. What do you mean? And so I wrestled and wrestled. And then, you know, as I stomped around the streets of Nagoya in Japan, finally came to a place where it's like, oh Lord, you know what? The house is yours and the money is yours. And the kids, I mean, ultimately the kids, they're yours. And you know, the ministry is yours, everything. I am yours. And so if you want this, I'm willing. It really came to it. I'm willing. And it turned out that it wasn't about Japan. I didn't realize that 3 days before Christmas, I would get that call. And I think it made all the difference. My heart had been in a place where it was like, I'm willing to do whatever it is. And in that journey, as hard as cancer was and going through active treatment and surgeries and losing my hair and chemotherapy and all that stuff, there was still an underlying confidence that was like, you know what? The Lord's got me and it's okay.
Wow.
And since cancer, I mean, the Lord has opened up so many doors that I could have never imagined.
Wow.
And, he's remained utterly faithful. I mean,
yeah.
It's just, he just keeps Yeah, it's, I think what that's what fresh faith looks like, that we're continually having to step out and trust him in ways where we can't figure it out. And he has to come through. And that actually strengthens our trust in the Lord. Because I think in North America, often we are pretty self-sufficient. We, you know, we have full refrigerators and, you know, we just, we can do a lot of things in our own strength. Mm-hmm. And the Lord continues to challenge us. And yeah, so I think for your listeners, sometimes it comes in the form of our kids, like with a diagnosis that we weren't expecting, or challenges. I mean, maritally, and I mean, there are churches that are splitting. There are so many places that we are invited to trust God.
Yeah.
And shaking our fist, we can actually lean into him even more.
I love that. I love thinking about, well, you sharing about your life, but even thinking about my own life in terms of these like moments of surrender and seeing the, like the bigger thing that God was doing. Like even you saying like you thought it was really about this, but then zoom out a little bit, little did you know the bigger things that God was even preparing you for. But I love that that phrase you just said, there's so many places that God is inviting us into trust him and into surrender. Well, I remember you spoke, and I remember hearing you speak. I was at an IF local here in LaGrange, and I'm sitting, you know, with some friends that I do Woven with and do the local women's ministry with. And I remember hearing you speak from the stage at IF Gathering on discipleship. And it was just such a beautiful moment. And we'll put it in the show notes of just you, not just you sharing, but then other women coming up with you and just kind of this beautiful visual of what that looks like. And so, again, I would encourage people to watch that. But I really just wanted to ask you of what does it look like to follow that calling to disciple today? Because I know this is a big part of your, what you're passionate about and what your heart is. Because I think that the word, even the, when we hear the Great Commission to go into the world and make disciples of all nations, I think we think, you know, it feels like maybe archaic language, or it feels like that, well, what does that mean? I'm here. My house is here. My life is here. What does that mean? That only applies to me if I go overseas and am spreading the gospel. What does it mean to make disciples now in 2024?
Yeah, I love your question. And it is such a passion. And I think it's, again, the brilliance of how God chose to spread the gospel. You know, like, I think it's pretty interesting because Jesus could have just tried to fill stadiums, you know, full of people and spread the message that way. But he chose to invest in the 12, who then invested in others, who invested in others. And here we are, 2,000 plus years later, still as followers of Christ. And so a discipler is one who's, you know, a few steps ahead of someone spiritually, you know, who's willing to teach what they know to someone who wants to learn to be a fruit-bearing follower of Christ in all that that means. And I think what's beautiful about that picture is it's not this huge, big, grand thing. It's literally life on life, and it's investing into people with an eye that they would then invest in others. So it never ends with us. So it's kind of like when I used to do a Bible study in the Greek system at UCLA, if there was a really amazing leader one year, if she didn't take the time to invest into the up-and-coming generation, that amazing Bible study would end when she graduated. And so I think that's the difference between making an impression versus an impact. Like, you can make an impression as a believer wherever you are, in your neighborhood, in your school, and on the soccer team. But if we're not, you know, really working ourselves out of a job so that the next generation can continue to carry that baton, I think we miss out on the way that God is going to continue to raise up the next generation. So we don't just disciple anybody. I think it's like we really are needing to be selective in who we invest in. And so the person that is wanting to be discipled needs to show an interest and a willingness to kind of commit to a relationship where it's like, I really want to be with someone who's a little bit older, who can help me to learn and even answer my questions and help me learn how to walk by faith, share my faith, and multiply my faith. Mm-hmm. And that's really what a discipler helps you to do. So there's everything from there's skills and there's also motivation for doing mm-hmm. these things. And so it's a combination of that and just living life. You know, so obviously as mothers, we're discipling our children, helping them to learn about the Lord and helping them to follow him in the ways that are age appropriate to them. And I think we have an incredible opportunity to influence all sorts of people through discipleship. And I would say it's not a cookie cutter kind of thing, but it can be for a season. It can be long, you know, over decades even too, but just the sense that there's a willingness to meet together, to grow, to hold each other accountable, to ask questions, you know, and to continue. Yeah. So those are my initial thoughts of many thoughts.
Yeah. Well, and if you're willing to, I would love for you even just to share a little bit more. That's so helpful and so insightful, but even taking it a step further for you in different seasons of life, mm-hmm. What has that looked like for you practically to do, you know, cause I could probably imagine a lot of women being like, I don't even know where to start. I don't know where to go. I don't know. That just feels awkward. Am I just going to walk up to somebody and say, do you want to be discipled? Then that makes me feel like I think I'm better than them. You know, I mean,
Right.
What does that look like? What, you know, mm-hmm. So help us to even think about maybe even if you're willing to share about like, how does that look for you in mm-hmm. a practical, break it down, tangible way?
Yeah, it does change and shift. And it's kind of like women. Our lives are so different. And what it was like 5 years ago is not what it's like now. And it probably won't be the same in 5 years from now. So there definitely needs to be a flexibility. A posture of flexibility in the midst of it. And sometimes our circumstances are such that it's just like physically impossible to really do a lot. Although I would say with online, there are still ways that we can continue to invest into each other. Mm-hmm. So I would say, you know, without it feeling hyper spiritual, but really if that's a desire of the heart, like to pray and ask the Lord, you know, Lord, this is my desire. So if you're putting this on my heart, then I'm trusting that you're also putting this desire on the heart of another. I think so often we discount because we don't ask, we don't inquire and come to find that, oh my gosh, this is exactly what I was hoping to do. So some churches do have, you know, in our little church, we have like a mentoring program where people sign up who are mentors and mentees, and they, you know, kind of have a structure that's set up already. For those who don't have that situation, you could actually be the one to start it. But I would say a couple things to keep in mind. One is that discipleship was really intended to, like the idea of multiplication versus addition is fascinating. There's a children's book, I think, about, maybe it was India, where, you know, this guy asked like the chessboard, like, I can either give you this much rice, or the guy said, well, if you would just give me one grain of rice today and then just double it on the next square of the chessboard and then double that the next chessboard. And by the time you get to the last square of the chessboard, there's enough rice to cover India like 2 feet deep. I mean, it's like that's what multiplication looks like. So really the way that Jesus wanted us to reach the world was impacting people who could impact people who would impact people. So I would say pray and also be selective with who you're investing in. So as a discipler, I would say, you know, you're talking to the woman who wants, like, I'd like to be a discipler. Then it's like, Lord, would you put into my path some hungry women who want to grow, who have the capacity to help other women grow? This could actually be, you know, young moms working with these high school girls at church or college ministry. I will always love college ministry, because for me, it was such a pivotal time to own my own faith. And I see it over and over. Darren and I did 28 years of campus ministry, but I love college age. And when college students decide to go for it with the Lord, they're unstoppable. So it could be, if you live in a community where there's a community college or a college group or something like that, just kind of popping into a ministry on campus, like, hey, I'm available and I could disciple a couple women. And then I would say meeting together would be as simple as, hey, as you go along your week, write down some of the questions that you have about God and your relationship with God. And we can kind of go through one or two of them and just really practically, like, how to have a quiet time and study the Bible. How, you know, what do I think about these different issues? What does the Bible have to say about this or that or relationships or conflict or any number of topics? But then also being mindful of what it looks like to help train somebody else. And so ideally, the church would be a place where curious people would come to discover, you know, who Jesus is, and helping those people even to meet up with the contact card people. Like, I came to visit the church, I've got questions about Jesus, like bringing a disciple with you. So two of you. So she's learning then to, like, how do you help a new believer to get grounded in their faith?
Right.
And what I find is that when I'm discipling, it actually supercharges my own relationship with the Lord, because I'm dependent. Like, there's questions that, like, I don't know the answer. And it's perfectly fine to not know all the answers, but it causes me to have to dig deeper into the Bible. Like, what does the Bible say about these things? And it keeps me on my toes and not complacent. Yeah. So those are just suggestions, but I think
so good.
It's not meant to be complicated.
But I love your practical advice and the thoughts of even starting with prayer. That's huge, right? Just not, that asking the Lord to lead you, whether it's the person who is seeking to, you know, grow and to be discipled, or the person who is doing the discipling and seeking to mentor in that way. Just to start with that, like, God, lead my steps and bring the right people into my path to make that happen, you know? And then as you kind of even said it, but, you know, even positioning ourselves, right? Don't live on an island, but when you seek a church and you seek to be a part of a healthy body of believers, that some of those things are, maybe the infrastructure is already in place and maybe it's not, but maybe there's probably, that's going to be the, you know, the ripe fields where you're going to find the need for those workers, you know?
And I would say, you know, for the woman that wants to be discipled, I would say, as you're praying, like, just observe some of the women in your life that you really want to, they emulate a faith that is authentic and winsome, or just something that it's like, gosh, I would love to get to know this woman more. Like, how do you walk with the Lord? And being able to be the one to say, you know, it doesn't have to be forever. Again, it's like, it's not meant to be complicated. And I wouldn't say, like, just jump into every relationship expecting it to be like 4 years long, you know, but like, hey, can we just grab a coffee and, you know, talk about our faith a little bit and then kind of feel it out? And it's like, if you meet with this woman and she's open to meeting, and it's like saying, you know, can we just for the next 6 months meet on monthly or weekly or whatever, just to encourage each other? I would love to ask you questions about how you do life, how you walk with the Lord, you know?
Yeah, I love that.
We'll be back in just a minute after a word from our sponsor. This fourth season of Wits End Real People Hard Questions would not be possible without the generosity of a handful of community sponsors who have given toward furthering the work of this organization. Wits End is an extension of Woven Ministry, a nonprofit that exists to equip women to study the Bible and cultivate meaningful relationships. A huge thank you to Lazy Q Ranch, Crosspoint Community Church, Scar and Sons, the Nietzsche Group, the 949, First Presbyterian Church, Premier Pools and Spas, LaGrange Family Health, and Literal Insurance Group. You guys collectively have made it happen, and we are so grateful. And now back to the show.
On your website, you share that you're an Asian American Christian woman, wife, mom, and a cancer survivor. And so this is kind of a loaded question, and you really kind of touched on it in different ways already, but just wanted to ask how each of these have shaped how you lead and how you live your life.
Oh yeah, it is loaded. Well, I would say the Christian, definitely Jesus. I love Jesus always and always. And I never want to lose sight of the simplicity and purity of devotion to Christ. And I think for me, being in ministry, it's easy to have ministry become life, but ministry is not life, and work is not life, and my kids are not life. Jesus is life. And so central to everything is Jesus. And then I would say the wife and mother part has been the most humbling humbling role of my life, but both of those, as far as really keeping me grounded in my need for the Lord and my own character defects and shortcomings and my own flesh and my pride and my sin, you know, just ever before me. So it's been a really humbling place, because I can be really nice for 2 hours at church on Sundays. I used to think I was true, nice. Right? I got married. Kids. And I'm just like, love.
Yeah. Everybody thinks I'm nice until I walk in my door and my kids are like, Mom, you haven't seen my mean mom, right?
Exactly. So it's like, I'm a much nicer auntie, you know? So it's like, but I just feel like if you really want to know who I really am, the people that are closest to me would be, you know, these people under the roof. And so there's been a sweetness to recognizing how much I need the gospel in those two areas, that I need to be reminded that God loves me and that I have sin and Jesus died for my sin. And there's now therefore no condemnation. I need to preach the gospel to myself all the time in these areas. And it's so simple that a 4-year-old can understand, but it's so profound. It will take the rest of my life to uncover. But in particular, as a wife and as a mother, I feel like those truths have come alive to me in really profound ways. So, yeah. Then the cancer piece, I would say, I can't tell you. Like, it was awful. I mean, it was awful. And I'm grateful to be in remission. It brought about a loss of innocence, because I always knew. Now, I've always known I will die one day. Like, everyone knows that. But I think having that hit me at the age of 42, just, it was so much sooner. And so there's just an appreciation for every milestone. I just relish every milestone. Mm-hmm. And I have this odd kind of confidence that I'm still here. And so God still has a purpose for me to be here. For whatever reason, he's more glorified with me here on earth for a little while longer, to which I'm grateful. But it's shifted even when I speak, because I'm no longer nervous. It's like there's this groundedness, like I'm still supposed to be here. And I'm just walking in the path that he's unfolding. And so the answer has really profoundly impacted me.
How long was I know you said you're in remission. I know it's not something that it's probably still always, you know, you get checkups, it's on your radar, but how long was your really intense part of your cancer battle?
Yeah, it was like a full year of active treatment. So surgeries. I had three surgeries and 6 rounds of chemo with 3 different drugs. I just wanted to hit it really hard because I was young. And then radiation for 6 weeks. And so, yeah, I still see my oncologist every year. But each year that I walk in remission, there's just a little bit more like, okay. But I have to say, you know, when the rubber met the road, it was like I was not afraid of dying. I just didn't want to miss out. I think it was a lot more about, I just really want to see all my kids learn to drive, you know,
yeah,
be there for the milestones, you know, like that's
absolutely,
just, that's mm-hmm. what my heart most wanted. Mm-hmm. And it was worth doing all of the treatment to try to see those.
And yeah, absolutely. We'll talk a little bit about the Asian American piece too, that you mentioned on your website as well. Yeah. And just what that means for your ministry and your heart.
I'm so grateful you asked because it is so core to me. It really is. It actually goes back to the IF gathering. You know, it was such a crazy story about how the Lord connected me with Jenny, you know, and I was just giving her some feedback about the IF gathering. And she said, you know, you have a great vision from the Lord, and if you're serious about reaching the next generation, you know, and discipling a generation, then I would just encourage you to diversify your stage, you know, because all of the speakers were white, you know. It's just like, just, and I didn't have any expectation that I would ever be a part of it. It was just more just feedback like, hey, this is awesome, I watched it online, it was great.
Yeah,
I had to diversify. And then it was like a little invitation that just kind of kept growing, which was one. But for me, as an Asian American Christian, you know, went for decades without seeing anyone who looked like me speaking at a main stage event. And even now in 2024, I still have people coming up to me like, you are the first Asian American that I've ever seen keynote at a conference like this. Or,
wow.
So, yeah, you know, and I did a big Mother's Day event at a big church in Texas, you know, one of those 5 satellite type campuses. And there was an Asian American mom who brought her 11-year-old daughter. They drove 45 minutes. They usually do video church, you know, they have their own church that gets streamed into, but she wanted her daughter to meet me because it's like, here was, you know, someone who's looks like her. And so that has been such a passion of mine to help raise up the next generation of Asian American Christian women leaders. And that's what, you know, the podcast is kind of designed to validate and give language to this experience of, you know, I was born in Wisconsin and grew up in Colorado, but I'm still othered. Like, people see me and think that I'm from another country, where it's like, actually, no, like, you know, I'm American. I'm an American. Like,
right.
So there's just there's a lot of struggle that comes with that, and assumptions that come with that. And I love being invited into predominantly white spaces to even be a person to kind of explain, like, this is some of the challenge that comes with it, because I operate in two worlds. I operate in an Eastern world and a Western world, and uniquely bring those qualities into my faith, into my relationships, into how I, you know, navigate life. And I think all the better for increasing our exposure.
Yeah.
And even how we interact with the Lord, you know, that we start to get lost thinking that it's supposed to be a certain way.
Right.
It may just be our North American, our North American Christianity, which.
Yeah.
So that's a podcast, event and stuff like that. And it's been a passion project.
And would you say the title of your podcast so people can look for that as well?
Oh yeah. It's called Someday Is Here.
Someday Is Here. Okay.
And this is what's so fun is that I've had like white pastors say, oh, I listened to your podcast. And I'm like, really? Like, I had no idea. So it's like,
that's
this,
awesome.
You know, so for those who really want to learn about Asian American culture, it's a really easy inroad, because you're just invited into a conversation, you're just listening. But there's a lot that's picked up just from a conversation, listening to two people who share a similar heritage. And I would say that that kind of opens up for all my white brothers and sisters. It's like, you know what? You are actually Swedish and German, and that's different than the Polish and the Italian, who's different than the Irish, who's, you know, so there's our ethnic heritage does affect a lot of how we navigate life. And so for the exploration of everyone's heritage, it really kind of explains some things. And so there's a great invitation, I think, to celebrating the different ways that God's brought our, who we are and where we are and where we sit.
I love that. Thank you for sharing all that. The one more thing I wanted to talk to you about. I know that we could probably talk for a really long time because there's so many things that I just love picking your brain about. And I'm taking notes, not just for the podcast, but this is for me personally, okay? My own set of notes, okay? But, you know, what's really fun is that you and your husband actually speak with my parents at marriage conferences. And so you mentioned being a part of family life. And you and Darren, remind me how long you guys have been married now.
32 years.
32 years. That's amazing. That's awesome. Well, yeah, 32 years is, I think when you, you know, my husband and I have been married, let's see, I think we just celebrated 16 years this past year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like, I know that in some ways it's small potatoes, but then once you start to get to like teenage years, you're like, okay, our marriage actually has like a driver's license now, you know, like we actually have some credibility now. We're not just like 3 years in, you know, like I feel like there's some pride that comes with that, you know, but for 32 years, I would just love to, you know, hear some of your wisdom. And again, there's probably so much that you can share and that we'd love to hear, but how do you not just, you know, make it or just get by or survive, but actually build a marriage that thrives and that sustains and that is really rich and really good when you get to 32 years, where it's not like, oh, phew, we made it. And now we can kind of just coast and live our separate lives. But actually, like, how do you build where it just keeps getting better?
Oh, I love your question. And I just, before I even jump into answering it, I love your parents. Dan and Julie Brennan are the real deal. They are just phenomenal humans.
They are
such a people to know them. They are really, I think probably one of the things that Darren and I've most enjoyed about being on the speaker team is that we get to interface with people like your parents. Like the team is amazing. So
that's cool.
Highest regard to them for sure.
That's cool.
In regard to answering the question about marriage, woo. That's a big one, because I would say Darren and I, you know, we have struggled in our marriage. We are so different. We come in with our own brokenness and our own baggage that impacts how we respond to things. And we've gone through seasons where we've been in marriage counseling. We've been in individual counseling. We've had to work at marriage. And so there's no silver bullet. You know, life comes at us. It's either from within or without, but we are constantly, well, there's several things that are going on, I think, with regard to marriage. And I think the pandemic actually surfaced a lot of these things when we had to shelter in place. It's like these things have always been issues, but now they've been surfaced because of having to spend time together.
Right.
And actually see, you know, and kind of have to work through
confront,
some of these things.
Right.
Confront. That's the word. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So we've actually been speaking at these last marriage conferences, and they've been sold out. Like, I think marriages have been under attack. I think Satan attacks marriages because marriage reflects the unity of God. And it's just, there's so much riding on a Christian marriage in particular. And so Satan hates marriage. He would not try to attack something that didn't matter. And because marriage is under attack, it's just, we think that the enemy is our spouse, when in fact there is a real enemy who tells lies and whose whole objective is to steal, to kill, and to destroy.
Yeah.
And so we have that going against marriage. We also have Hollywood and just these unrealistic expectations that it should just be easy and romantic and beautiful all the time. God's calling us to unity, and oneness does not mean sameness, but boy, when you have two totally different people trying to make it work, it does end up often causing conflict, disagreements, because it's actually better for it. We're better for it, but learning to communicate through that is really hard. So I would say, you know, it's anything that's worthwhile requires work. There's an investment. Yeah. And we will reap the benefits of our investment. I also know, though, that I have friends who have done all the right things to do. Like, they were faithful in their date nights, and they're, you know, it doesn't guarantee an awesome marriage. So it really is, I think, a combination of commitment to stick through it, through the hard times, and a willing and a humility to be really good forgivers, to grant forgiveness and to receive forgiveness. I think that is really key. That's where the gospel comes in all over again. It's like, oh man, I came in hot into this conversation, and I was determined to prove myself right. And so from the get-go already, I'm already like, I'm right, you're wrong, and I have a case against you, and I'm going to prove it. And like, when I have that kind of posture rather than a posture of humility, then it's just not going to go well. Then let me just share that from personal experience, like last week. So I do think that there is, no, and so that's where I think I love being a part of the marriage conference, because we have a whole range of couples that are coming in. Some are just here for a tune-up. Some are just, you know, set this up as a romantic getaway for the weekend that they, you know, decide to do for Valentine's Day or something fun. Some are at the end. And it is amazing to see that God can restore and keep and help keep bringing closer couples if it takes some time to actually talk with one another. So communication, like if I only had to give one answer, it'd be a two-part, like, humble communication.
Humility and communication.
I'm just trying to squeeze them all in there. But truly, I think that, that would be for sure, worthwhile. And to know that marriage goes through different seasons, and not to compare our marriages to other people's marriages, and not to try to fit into a cookie cutter, because God is so creative. And I came into marriage thinking, well, the husband needs to be doing X, Y, and Z, and the wife does X, Y, and Z. And it's like, not necessarily. So just expanding how I see
I love that. Yeah. And your phrase, just be good forgivers, like be good at it, make a habit of it, exercise those muscles, practice it.
When there is, even if just one of us comes with an attitude of humility, it changes the whole conversation. And man, I wish I could do that better. I'm firstborn, so I'm kind of a little bit bossy. but if I could learn, you know, even just catching myself, oh wow, I just got into fix it mode. And you know, you were hearing, and I am so sorry. And the whole it's the tone, it's my, you know, my approach, all of it. He can tell. Like, he can tell what
He's smart. He's intuitive.
He knows me.
Exactly. Yeah.
When he's picking up on it, it just melts my heart. Like, if he takes the time and understands my perspective, even, like, wow, I really do want to work with him. And I, you know, ultimately, I still like him.
So, yeah. Okay. I guess I do still like you. Yeah.
Good to be reminded.
So true. Okay.
Well, today this is really fun, isn't it? We're calling this outro with the Opster. Today I've got one of my favorite people, my 8-year-old son, Opie Jack. He's our youngest. Opie.
What?
I'm so happy you're here with us today. With me. It's not us. I mean, you're here with me, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like a date, mm-hmm. right? Except for without, like, ice cream and a movie and candy. So it's not like your favorite kind of date. What would be your favorite date with me? Like, if we could do anything for a date, what would it be? Think about it. If I picked you up from school and was like, just you and me, bud. We're going on a date. What would we do?
Go to ZDT's.
ZDT's. Oh, yeah. We went to that place. What does ZDT's have?
Rides and arcades.
Rides and arcades. You like that, don't you? Well, I figured that it was about time for us to kind of expand this podcast into the family a little bit and really give listeners an opportunity to hear what it's really like in the Scarborough household, right? And so I'm going to be asking Opie some questions and my other kids over other outros, but I'm going to be asking some questions that I have not run by them before, and I'm going to just let it be a raw, honest answer. So whatever comes to mind, okay? And I'm going to ask you some silly, fun questions, Ope. And then I'm also going to ask you some questions that are more like...
serious.
A little more serious. And you can be as honest as you want to be, you know? Are you nervous at all?
No.
No. Okay. This is like natural for you, right? Yeah. All right. I'll start with a fun question. You ready?
Yeah.
What is your favorite thing to do as a family?
Go to... Disney World.
Go to Disney World? How many times have we been to Disney World?
Once.
Okay, well, we can just talk about Disney World for a minute. What? Why would you say that was one of the favorite things that we've ever done as a family?
I don't know. It was just a really good time. Like, fun. And we got to ride all the rides. Go to all the parks. Yeah.
Yeah. What, were you brave?
Yeah.
Yeah? Did you ride everything?
Yeah.
Did you ride Tower of Terror?
Yeah.
Tower of Terror? You rode Tower of Terror?
Yeah.
I know. I'm just kidding. I'm acting like I don't know, but I did know because I saw you. I didn't do it. I was okay.
She's too scared.
Ooh, that would be a more serious question I could ask you. What do you think Mom is scared of?
Bugs.
Bugs?
Cockroaches.
Cockroaches, for sure.
Definitely cockroaches. She hates cockroaches.
So now you know. Our house has cockroaches.
Not always.
Not always. Just certain times. Why do you think sometimes houses have cockroaches? Do we have a dirty house? Is that what the problem is?
Yeah.
We do?
It's old.
It's old. It is old. But you think our house is dirty?
Not that much.
Not that much? Just sometimes? Maybe when, like, little boys leave goldfish crumbs around and stuff.
Like That's you. Like me.
Like you.
Like me.
Like you. That's right. Okay, well, let's go back to Disney World a second. I want to ask you a question about, okay, let's say someone who has never been to Disney World, maybe they're even, like, an alien or something. I don't know. They, like, don't know what you're talking about when you say Disney World. How would you describe Disney World to someone who has never been there and knows does not know what you're talking about? Like, how would you describe it?
It has 4 parks.
Okay.
It has a lot of rides.
Okay.
And it's the most fun you've ever done. It's the most fun you've ever went to in your world, in your life.
Most fun you've ever went to in your life. I kind of like the way you said it. The most fun you ever went to in your world. All right, now let's ask a little bit more serious of a question, okay? Are you ready for this? This is going to be a little harder, okay? But I want you to be honest, okay?
Okay.
What do you think that Mom could do a better job of? That's me. I'm Mom. Now you can be honest.
Building Legos.
Ooh, I'll take that. Can you explain a little bit more?
She always says she's bad at building Legos.
Am I bad at it?
Yeah.
I am pretty bad at it.
Yeah.
It's true. It's really embarrassing, actually. Is there anything, like, more serious, though, I need to be better at? Like, because I can take that. That's okay. I can work on building Legos. But is there anything more serious I need to work on?
Not like, that I know.
Like, in real life or something? You know, like life stuff? Like, being more, like, kind or, like, more like Jesus or...
Kind.
Kind. Am I not kind?
Not most of the time.
Not most of the time?
No.
I'm not kind.
Not really. You gave me that idea.
What?
You gave me that idea.
I gave you an idea of what? That I'm not kind?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
You just said it.
No, I'm saying, or is that what you're saying? Do you really think I'm not very kind? Or am I a nice, like a kind person or no?
Yeah.
Oh, I am. Okay, now I feel better. But you just said you didn't think I was very kind most of the time.
I said not most of the time.
So that means just not.
When we're acting bad, you're...
Okay, okay, I can take
you're
that.
You're not Oof. Kind.
When, yeah, then like serious mom comes out.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So not most of the time am I unkind. Most of the time I am kind?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
If you'd like to know more about this ministry, check out our website at wovenministry.com or download the Woven app to engage on a deeper level. Please take the time to rate and review this podcast. It helps listeners find this feed. But better yet, share Wits End with a friend. Word of mouth goes a long way. Music and editing for the show is by Callan Brown, and production is by Tim Scarborough. We are so thrilled you tuned in today.